Harris back to pass. Looks end zone. Has his man. Has the touchdown. Terrence Tolliver. Got a shot here. Did he make it? Yes, he did. What a catch. Oh, my. Luke Tasker touchdown.
Welcome to Pods Kiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. So, I don't know really how to put this, but you and I, me mostly, but since you're part of the show, you're a part of this as well. We are in a podcast fantasy league. So we are going to be competing against seven other of the CFL podcasts that are out. So it's us, it's Blue Bomber Talk, Rouge Radio, I'm trying to think of all of them, the Rouge White and Blue, Esk's Empire, CFL Horseman, Two and Out, and I know I'm forgetting someone because I'm pretty sure that was just seven, so I apologize for not remembering. Oh, BC Lions Den. Those are the eight. So we are going to be competing against them in fantasy football this year. And we just had the draft lottery this past weekend. And we have the number one overall pick. So I am not a fan of having the top pick. If you remember in our personal fantasy league last year, I also grabbed the number one overall pick. And you and I made a deal that swung the first pick to you in exchange for, I think we swapped first and second round picks or something like that. Then you screwed me over and took the receiver that I didn't want, which actually ended up paying out better for me because the guy I wanted was Weston Dressler. He didn't have a great season. The guy he got me was Adarius Bowman, who I then traded for, I can't even remember for who, but it doesn't matter what moves I made last year. I went, I think, what, 17-3 or whatever it was, and just crushed the competition and won our title. But I figured since we're in this league, since it's our name, not just my name on this, I want to get your opinion. Who should we go after with the first overall pick? I'm leaning towards Calgary's quarterbacks. I'm thinking I have Bo Levi Mitchell to me as the front runner for MOP. I think he's going to put up some big numbers. That's kind of where I'm leaning right now. Do you agree, or is there somewhere else you think I should look?
Well, I think I went with Calgary's quarterbacks last year, if I remember correctly. But yeah, that'd be a good pick. If Kolaris wasn't out, I'd go with Hamilton's QBs.
Oh, for sure. If Kolaris was healthy, that would be my pick.
Yeah, I think
without a doubt, I'd go Homer there for sure.
I think maybe Toronto's QBs would be a good pick. I think Ricky Ray is going to have a big year. But yeah, I have no problem with, you know, if we're making a decision right now, I'd have no problem with Calgary's QBs. I think Bo Levi Mitchell can still improve a lot. I think he's a really good quarterback, and I think he can put up some really big numbers. You know, he had a good season last year, but I think he only had 4,500 passing yards. I think he can jack that up to over 5,000. So I wouldn't have a problem with going with Calgary's QBs. And I think, you know, if anything happened to Mitchell, I think Drew Tate's a pretty darn good backup. So, yeah, that's a pretty good pick in my opinion.
Bam, you nailed it. That's what's separating me from, because the two I'm looking at are Calgary and Toronto, and the separation is the backup quarterback position. If Ray gets hurt, you're relying on Adrian McPherson and Logan Kilgore, essentially, not guys I'd be super happy to be starting in a fantasy league. Whereas in Calgary, like you mentioned, if Mitchell gets hurt, it's Tate. Tate's a step down, but Tate's still pretty, we've seen him play in this league. He can compete. He can score. He can do a lot of things. Like, he's a good football player. So I'm a lot more confident in Calgary if Mitchell goes down than I am with Toronto if Ray goes down. So that's kind of why I'm leading to Calgary. And another thing we got to think about is without John Cornish there anymore, I know they got Jerome Messam and he's a bull just like Cornish was. I think that Mitchell's passing touchdown numbers are going to go up. That's how I feel. So I feel like Mitchell's ready to put together this like big season because now he's the man running that offense. So that's kind of why I'm leaning that way.
You got to wonder though, with those new receivers in Calgary, if he's going to have the same cohesion with his receiving group, because Fuller's gone.
Eric Rogers,
that's who I was thinking of. He's gone. There's a lot of people that are missing now from that receiving corps. So you got to wonder if there's going to be the same chemistry there between the groups. So we shall see. You know, they brought in Bakari Grant. He's a talented receiver, and the Huffnagel can find talent, but we'll see if he can put up big numbers with these new receivers.
now you're making me question it. It's tough. This is why I don't like having the first pick, because you have to – you're starting off the draft. And if you flub that first pick, the rest of your draft can kind of go down the tube. So I would much prefer to have a mid to late round pick. But that's not the way the balls bounce. So we got the first overall pick. Each week, we, as when the season starts, we'll update who we're playing and how we did on the show. So I'll let you know. I'll let everyone know. My goal is to go undefeated and win this league, and then we can proclaim podcast supremacy over everybody else. How does that sound to you?
That sounds great to me.
All right, so I'll let everyone will know how this is going, and I just think it's going to be a lot of fun. There's the possibility too that we might record this as a podcast. I don't know how many people will be interested in listening to eight dudes get together and have a fantasy draft, but I think with the chirping that could happen, with some anger over some picks, I think it could be a riot.
That would be kind of fun, and it'd be more than eight dudes because there's, you know, two people per podcast or something like that. So
it'd be I just think it'd be fun. Someone brought up the idea. I was like, that's a great idea. Let's get it done. So we'll have to see how it goes. And I don't know. I think it'll be a laugh ride. And this will be fun. It'll be a way to kind of compete without really competing. So, but we plan on winning. That's what we do over here. Yeah, we don't take losing lightly. So let's kick some ass.
Yeah, we'll get it done.
All right, so let's get into some CFL news, or we'll start with the Ticat stuff. There's been a little bit of Ticat stuff since you and I last got together. Orlando Steinhauer has received a promotion. In addition to his defensive coordinator responsibilities, he's now been named the team's assistant head coach. What do you think about this?
I think it's a great move. I think that it takes some of the pressure off Austin. He, you know, Steinhauer's been rumored to be a head coach with other teams. There's been, you know, teams that are interested in him. So this is a great, I think it's a great thing for the Ticats to relieve pressure off of Austin. And I think it's a great thing for Steinhauer to add to his resume. And maybe he sticks around for a couple more years if he has that assistant head coach title and stays with the Ticats. You know, that'd be a great thing for Hamilton. And I just think it's a great thing overall for both parties. So I'm pretty happy about this move.
Well, it rewards loyalty. It rewards Steinhauer's loyalty to the organization by giving him what I'm assuming is a pay bump as well with this. He's not going to take on added responsibilities and not get added money. So it kind of shows them that they appreciate what he's done. They value his input. They value his what he does on the staff. I don't know if this will necessarily keep him here long term. His contract is still up at the end of the year. There might be a couple of head coaching vacancies. Montreal could be a spot. Perhaps Winnipeg, maybe even BC. Maybe because I know BC made a run at him a couple years ago when they hired Jeff Tedford. So I know Wally Buono has signed a contract extension, and he's supposed to be the head coach for at least the next 2 years, but maybe he steps aside and tries to bring Steinhauer in since he tried to do that before. We'll have to wait and see, but I don't think that this is in any way a bad thing for the team to give Steinhauer this added responsibility. Like you said, take some pressure off Austin, and also gives him more of a, like, it, but, like, pads his resume, and he can do a little bit more and showcase that. So I just think it's a good thing all the way around.
Yeah, I totally agree. Steinhauer is an up-and-coming coach, obviously, and he's going to lend his talents to help Austin as much as he can with that assistant head coach job. So, yeah, I'm pretty stoked on his pay raise, on his job upping. So, yeah, it's a great thing.
Speaking of stoked, how stoked were you when you learned that Simone Lawrence had signed a contract extension with the Ticats?
I'm amazingly stoked. I mean, this guy is one of the leaders on defense. He's one of our best players on the team. He's an emotional leader on the field. He shows what he can do on the field, you know, with leadership. He shows it on the field, and then he talks the talk. You know what I mean? I'm sure he's a talker in the locker room. He's a talker on the field, and he plays up to, you know, the highest standards. So this guy is, you know, he's Hamilton Tiger Cats football right now. He's one of the faces of the franchise. So to have him locked up for a couple more years is a great thing.
For sure. He's the heart and soul of this team. His extension runs through 2017. So it's not like he's going to be here forever, but the older he gets, the longer he signs the extensions, the less likely it is that he's going to go and try the NFL again. Mm. And you listen to this guy talk in interviews or wherever you can see this guy. He loves this team, loves this city. He has really embraced being a Tiger Cat. And I don't think that we will ever see this guy really wear other colors now that he's been here for this long. And he's really flourished as a player. He's gotten better every single year. And I think he's ready to take that massive leap he's in the conversation already as one of the best linebackers in the CFL, but I think he's going to take that next step. And like, we're looking, I hate to put pressure on people, but if he continues progressing the way he is, we're talking about one of the all-time greats. Like, he's just impressive. Like, everything he does, he's one of my favorite players, and I'm just so, so glad that he's going to be sticking around for at least the next 2 years.
Yeah, he's knocking on the door. Last year, he was up for Defensive Player of the Year, and maybe this year he wins it. He's one of those players where you hate him if he's not on your team, but you love him when he's on your team. So, yeah, he's one of my favorite as well, and I'm just excited to watch him play in black and gold for another couple of years. And like you said, the longer he plays in this league, the more chance he stays with this team. You know, you never know. You never know where what's going to happen. He could be an Argo, God forbid, you know, after 2017. But I hope he's a lifelong Ticat. And one of these days, he might be up on the Wall of Honor or in the Hall of Fame. So
I could see it. I could really see it.
Yeah, for sure.
I could really see it. He's a talented player. He's got so many different skill sets. He's not a one-dimensional linebacker. He can do it all. He can rush the quarterback. He can cover. He's a sure tackler. Mm-hmm. He has really developed. And I remember when they made the trade to get him here, which is still one of the best trades this team has ever made. It was like, the deal was they got Simone, they got Jeremiah Mazzoli, and they got Greg White for Nathan Kanya and the rights to Carson Rockhill. Like this, we're talking Simone, one of the best linebackers in the league. Mazzoli is probably going to be the starting quarterback for this team. And without him last year, they probably don't make it to the East Final and come within, you know, a whisker of getting back to the Grey Cup. And now we're going to see, this trade that this team made in the early onset of Ken Austin's tenure here, it really kind of set the tone for how different this team is, because no offense to Edmonton, but they fleeced him on this deal.
And it was, you never know with those deals. It was, you know, that wasn't a huge deal at the time. I mean, yeah, there was, you know, five or six players in it, but, you know, Simone Lawrence wasn't a huge star, and Jeremiah Mazzoli had some potential, but, you know, we didn't know what he was going to be. So you never know with those deals. It could be an under-the-radar deal, and then a couple years later, you could be like, wow, like, they really got some really good players, and we didn't even know it.
Yeah, I think the big part of the deal was getting Greg White, because he was a starting caliber Canadian offensive lineman. And unfortunately, injuries, I remember he had a great season in 2013, but then in 2014, injuries kind of took their toll on him. He went back to Edmonton. He was with the Eskimos last year. And again, played much, if at all. Injuries kind of kept him out. And he has since retired. He was a good player, though. And he played well when he was here. And I definitely appreciate the what he did while he was a Tiger Cat. But it was Simone and Mazzoli that have really put this deal over the top. Simone started essentially from day one when he got here. And yeah, he started in 2012 a bit with Edmonton when JC Sherritt got hurt, I think it was. So he had some film on him, and you could kind of see that he was a talented player, but no one could have foretold that he was going to turn into the guy that he has turned into in Hamilton, where, like I said, he is in the conversation as one of the best linebackers in the league.
Yeah, you couldn't see that coming. He's really developed. Like you said, he's an overall great player. You know, he does everything pretty much. So yeah, he's just a great addition to the team, and he will be for, you know, till 2017, and that's a great thing for the Ticats.
Yeah, he'll be here for as long as he wants to be here, and I'm excited about that. What I'm not excited about, however, is the continued absence of training camp for Mr. Brandon Banks. Now, this is a very messy situation. He's got some family issues that he's dealing with down in the States that are preventing him from coming up here. Ken Austin talked about it. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. Ken Austin talked about it on Monday after practice, that they don't know when he's going to be back. They're just letting, like, it's just whatever is happening has to come to a conclusion. So they're kind of preparing for life without him. But we're a couple days away from the first preseason game. We're a little over 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season. I personally think there's a very good chance that we don't see Brandon Banks on June 23rd at BMO Field with the Ticats for the regular season opener. I think this could go into the season, and that's a kind of a big blow to the team.
Yeah, it's what's the deal with that? My Jerry Seinfeld impression. Interesting. I didn't see this coming. You know, Brandon Banks seems to be really excited to be a Ticat, and I don't think we're not going to see him in the season, but you know, to miss a week or more of training camp is kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, there's a rumor out there that he missed one day because of a pool party with that, but that was, you know, just a rumor.
Yeah, that has been debunked. That is not true. Anyone who's doing that is talking about that as being the reason why he didn't show up for day one is still, they're to be frank, they're talking out of their ass. They are taking something and running with it. That is not the reason he is not. It is legitimately a family issue that he's dealing with, and that is why he's not here yet.
Yeah, that's it. And you can't blame the guy. If there's a family emergency, then that's what it is. He's a guy that's been with the Ticats for a couple of years now. Obviously, he knows the system. I don't think there's going to be big changes with the system, even though we lost our offensive coordinator. He's a guy that can miss training camp. You know, you don't want him to miss training camp, but he can, and I guess he is. So I just hope that he's back before the season starts so we can see Speedy B on the field, because he's a big part of what the Ticats do on special teams and occasionally on offense. So I hope everything's all right with the family, and I hope he's back soon.
Yeah, I agree. He's not the type of guy that you really have to worry about missing a ton of camp, because his role with the team is not of a number one receiver or anything like that. Like, if there's one person who can probably miss a majority of training camp and it not really affect them, it is Banks. The only thing that it would hurt is getting those, like, reps, those actual football reps with the guys in camp, getting some game reps. And again, he probably wouldn't have seen the field in this first preseason game, probably would have seen it very minimally in the second preseason game, but he still would have gotten those football reps in that I think are important before the season starts. So maybe even if he shows up a couple of days before the season is set to go, he probably won't play. Like, my guess is if he hasn't shown up by the time that roster cutdowns are due, he's probably put on the one game injured list or something along those lines, the suspended list or something, where he wouldn't be eligible to play in the first game anyway. But yeah, like, if anyone thinks that this is any sort of contract dispute or that he's not happy here, there was a celebrity softball game, a charity softball game that the team did mid-May. And Banks was here for that. That you don't typically see guys come up and do these community relations things if they're unhappy with their contract or they're unhappy with their working environment. So we can put that to rest as well. Like I said, this is legitimately a family issue that will sort itself out in due time. And then once it does, Brandon Banks will be back returning punts for touchdowns for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Now, what this does create, however, is kind of a spot for someone to maybe make a move. Like, there's now an open spot here. Brandon Banks was solidified as the team's kick and punt returner. Do you think maybe Chad Owens sees a lot more time on specials now that Banks isn't here? Or do you think maybe they go with one of these younger guys, maybe a Junior Collins or someone like that?
Yeah, I could see them going with the younger guy. I personally don't think Chad Owens has much left in the return game. I could be completely wrong on that, but there's definitely been a decline in the last couple of years. I think he's still a really good receiver. I think he's gotten better as a receiver over the years, and I think that he can still really contribute as a receiver. But if I were the Ticats, if I was one of the coaches, I would see what one of the younger guys has. You know, a younger guy with top end speed, maybe. One of the draft picks, Mike Jones. You know, he is great.
Who?
Great, but no, oh, no, wait.
Did Mike I say Jones? That? Who? You don't know. No, Mike Jones, the rapper. Mike Jones. Who? Mike Jones.
Oh.
Every no. time someone said who, Mike Jones.
Yeah, I thought you meant I got the name wrong.
Oh, no, not at all. If you screw up Mike Jones, I'm finding a new co-host. Yeah. If we ever screw up a name like that, we're ending the show. We're done.
It was Ryan Jones that was drafted by the.
Yes, that's true. Okay, that's true. Okay. Fair enough.
So yeah, like you know, I'm not familiar with that Mike Jones reference.
Go look it up. He was a hip hop artist from like the mid 2000s. He had a couple like minor hits. Every song was like, "Who is it?" Like, I think he had a song that was called "Who is Mike Jones?" And it's like, "Mike Jones, who? Mike Jones." And so when the Ticats draft him, I think I even tweeted out like, "Ticats draft Mike Jones, who? Mike Jones." Because if you know who he is, it's funny. If you don't, I guess it doesn't really make much sense.
Like, are you Jimmy Ray? Who wants to know? Who wants to know?
Okay. You know what? Enough. We're getting off the rails here. What the hell are we even talking about?
Who
might be the punt returner and kick returner?
Yeah. That's so it. I'm sure that, you know, there's a ton of guys that come in that have top end speed each year. So I'm sure they could find someone to return kicks if it's just for one game. And, you know, focus on Chad Owens being a receiver. You know, focus on him doing one role. He's at that age where I don't think he can handle two roles that much. So that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, not to name drop, but I do remember when we had Jeff Reinbold on the show, he did mention that Chad probably would see some time on special teams, and they would kind of do a two-headed monster of Banks and Owens, which would scare the bejesus out of pretty much every special teams coordinator in the league. But I'm with you. I don't know if Owens can handle that role singularly for an extended period of time. Maybe a game or two we could do it, but I think that they should be using other guys. Like, I know CJ Gable, and this is kind of crazy. I know he's done some duty on kickoff returns in the past, even when he was the starter starting tailback. So, but I think you want to limit the amount of hits he takes due to all the injuries he suffered. But I think the team has some options, but we cannot minimize the fact that this is the reigning most outstanding special teams player. To not have him in the lineup means that the Ticats special teams absolutely takes a dip, because every time Banks touched the ball, he is a threat to score. We're not going to have that for as long as he's out, and that hurts the team a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this guy's a huge talent. He has been for the last couple of years. I think he still has that great speed. I think he's still the same player, even though he's a year older. So, you know, he'll be back. He will be back. He'll be returning punts for the Ticats, you know, scoring touchdowns. So I don't think we have a ton to worry about. You know, it's not a good thing that he's not in training camp, but it's not the end of the world either. So I'm not too worried about it. And I know, I don't think that you are either. I think it's fans of other teams are going to blow it out of proportion, you know, with all that stuff about contract disputes and all that, but there's nothing there to be. I don't think that's true at all. I don't have any inside information or anything like that, but I trust what Drew Edwards reports and what the guys that report on the Ticats say. So, yeah, I don't think it's a big concern, and he'll be back soon.
Yeah, the concern is only if he misses time in the regular season, because that hurts the team's chances to win. Not having him, he's a major player for this team, and not having him does make the team not as good. So, missing camp, missing preseason, maybe missing a game or two. If this thing drags out into the summer and into the fall, then I think we get worried. But as far as it stands right now, I'm not happy with the situation. I wish he was here, but I don't think it's something where it's like, oh, Brandon Banks isn't here. Well, the team's not going to win a game this year. Like, I don't think it's that drastic.
No, not at all. It's he might miss one or two games, and that would suck, but we'll do all right. We won some games without Claros, and we can win some games without Brandon Banks.
For sure, for sure. So I want to get into some CFL news here. There's been a rash of retirements recently. We saw Dominic Picard hanging up. Lavelle Hawkins just retired in BC. Gerald Brown had retired from Toronto. But the one I want to focus on is a guy who used to play here, and that's Ryan Hines. Ryan Hines has decided to retire. He signed with Ottawa in the offseason after spending the last couple of years with Edmonton. He was in Hamilton. He was drafted by the Tiger Cats. He spent a few years here in Hamilton. I was a big fan of this guy. I really liked him as a player, as a person. He's a good human being. He's apparently retiring to become a doctor, so good on him, and I wish him much success. But he's one of these guys that he got drafted by Marcel Belfay's regime and then kind of fell out of favor during the Cortez year, and I think that's kind of unfortunate, because I thought that when they drafted him, I was really high on him. He was basically what Courtney Steven has become. And Courtney Steven has performed much better than Hines. But I always liked Hines and thought that he could be that corner out there on the island way deep. And I can't remember if he got traded or if he got released. I don't remember what happened. But I remember when he went to Edmonton, it was kind of a bummer. And now that his career's over, it's kind of a shame, because I thought that he could have been one of those really talented Canadian guys who started for a decade. But like I said, he's apparently going to become a doctor. So you can't really fault the guy for that. So I wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, he had a lot of potential when he was a young chap. But, you know, he had a pretty good career, you know, not a great career. He lasted, you know, I'm not sure how long he was in the league.
I think he first came to Hamilton in 2010.
Okay, so not that long, I guess.
But a 5-6 year career is nothing to
see. That's around the average, you know, average football career, maybe even a little bit more than the average football career. So, yeah, I'm sure he enjoyed his time in the league and is just ready to move on, you know. Being a doctor is a long-term thing. I don't know if he was going to school while he was playing in the CFL, but he's on to the next stage of his life, and I wish him the best of luck as well.
What do you make of all these retirements this offseason? There have been a ton.
It's interesting. You see it in both leagues, CFL, NFL. I guess it might be because of maybe players are looking at the long-term effects of playing football. Maybe they don't want to be, you know, hobbling around when they're 40, 50 years old. And maybe it's partially due to the salaries in the CFL that, you know, they figure that they're not making enough money, you know, for the risk. Could be a number of factors, but it seems to be more and more in football that players are retiring earlier, especially this year, that it's just a rash of players just, you know, retiring, and talented players who still have a lot left in the tank, like what's his face in Saskatchewan, the offensive lineman,
Ben Heenan.
I mean, that guy could have been making a ton of money, CFL standards, for another 10 years if he wanted. So it's an interesting thing that's going on with all these players retiring. And I think there's a number of factors, but, you know, it's kind of sad when you see players that have so much potential left, call it a day. So I don't know what to make of it. And I hope they're making the right decision, and I wish them the best of luck.
I do think it's people are looking at the long-term effects of football. Because even if we look down south in the NFL, we saw a 31-year-old Hall of Fame caliber wide receiver in Calvin Johnson call it quits because his body just didn't want to take the pounding anymore. Marshawn Lynch, running back for the Seattle Seahawks, 29 years old, retired. These are guys who made millions of dollars. Now, the stories have come out that Lynch apparently has never spent a dime of his earnings in the National Football League. So he's set up for, he's going to be perfectly fine. Because, you know, sometimes these guys retire early and then they come back because they run out of money. Tiki Barber is a, I don't know how big of an NFL fan you are, but Tiki Barber retired at around 31 and then tried to come back at 36 and no one really wanted him because he was a 36-year-old running back. But he retired, kind of ran out of money, went through a divorce, had to come back. But we see these guys, there's a lot in the CFL, there's been a lot in the NFL. I think it is simply the long-term effects of playing football, and these guys look at it and go, you know what, I had a good run, made some money, but now I'm ready to do something else. I think in the NFL, obviously, it's I've made a lot of money and can afford to not do anything. Mm-hmm. And in the CFL, I think it's guys deciding it's time to move on with my life. Like John Cornish was what, 30 years old when he called it quits this off season? Yeah. And yeah, he had dealt with concussions and injuries the last few years and realized, hey, you know what? My brain, my body is not worth it anymore. And he wasn't making peanuts. He was one of the higher paid players in the league. Canadian starting running back, as talented as he was, multi-time most outstanding Canadian, one-time most outstanding player. Like, we're talking about a guy who was making top echelon money, and he says, hey, you know what? It's not worth it. And I think with these guys we see, Ben Heenan, Ryan Hines, Gerald Brown, Maurice Price, the list goes on and on. I'm sure I could say, we would list a bunch and still forget a bunch that called it quits this offseason. But I think they look at it and just say, I'm 30-something or I'm in my late 20s and it's time to move on to that next phase of my life. And I want to be able to do it where I can enjoy that next phase of life. Not everyone can play in this league like Henry Burris can play in this league for 20-something years or you know what I mean? Like Peyton Manning plays in the NFL for nearly 20 seasons. Like, not everyone can do that. So these guys, I think it all comes down to they don't want to risk their bodies anymore. They're happy with what they did and they're ready to move.
Yeah, and you look at player like Cornish, if it's concussions, if it's head injuries, then more than anything else, you got to look at retirement, because once you have a couple of those, it seems they keep on coming. Like, you look at a guy like Matt Dunnigan back in the day. I mean, this guy had so many concussions and it's just a dangerous thing. Yo, he had to call it quits. I remember when he signed with the Ticats. So I was,
yeah, like, didn't he retire like midway through the season?
I think it was maybe, I think we were like 4-0 or 5-0, or we had a really great start. And, you know, he was brought in. We're like, oh, Dunnigan, he's the savior. And then a game against BC, he got knocked, and then that was it. It was over. And so you can't take it for granted. And, you know, Dunnigan has had his problems after the CFL, after his career. So you just got to be careful with these injuries, especially if they're head injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen Dunnigan talk about it, be very open about the depression and the repeated headaches and this light sensitivity and the stuff that he's gone through. He's been very open about that. And I think it's really helped, especially some of these younger guys and some of the guys in the CFL who maybe look at the NFL and go, well, that's happens down there. Like, it doesn't happen to me. It kind of opened everyone's eyes. And I think that's a good thing. I really do. And all these guys that retired, wish them the best of luck, of course. Like, go enjoy the next half of your life and go do great things. And I'm happy that they got a chance to entertain us on the field. But when it's time to go, it's time to go. And these guys are mostly going out on their own terms. And I think that's a good
thing. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the people retire, but then there's new stars that come up and new names that we learn to know and recognize and new stars. So it's sad to see them go, but there'll be new guys coming up to fill their void.
Happens all the time. There's always someone new. I remember being a fan and thinking, oh, I can't imagine this team not having Danny McManus at quarterback. And then it was not having a 49ers fan. Joe Montana doesn't play anymore. Or even just like players in general. It's like Barry Sanders is retired. Like, you think about these guys, Mike Pringle can't retire. He's still good. Like, you think of these guys and you think, oh man, the league's not going to be the same without him. And it keeps humming. We keep turning out new players, new stars, and there's always a younger crop ready to take over. And that's what makes this fun. Okay, so what might not be fun, at least for Trevor Harris in Ottawa, is this Henry Burris extension, where he has said that he is coming back for another season in 2017. I want your thoughts on this first before I get into it. What do you think about this whole Burris extension?
It's interesting. It's, you know, it runs for as long as Trevor Harris's contract, so I don't see what's going on there. I'm a little bit confused, because Trevor Harris was supposed to be the guy that took over for Burris after he was done, and if their contracts run for the same amount of time, then there's no guarantee that Harris is going to re-sign with the Red Blacks. You know, he could be mad about Burris's extension, and then what happens? Then they're then they're screwed. They don't have a dependable guy to step in, you know, unless they groom someone else behind Burris and behind Trevor Harris, that the third string guy. But it's just a head scratcher. I mean, I thought that Burris would play out his contract and then Trevor Harris would be the guy, but I guess not. You know, I guess Burris wants to play till he's, you know, 75 like Damon Allen. So we're going to see what's going to happen there. It's going to be an interesting situation because either way, there's going to be one unhappy quarterback wearing red and black in the next couple of years.
I remember a couple of years ago, Burris had mentioned that he thought it would be a great way to end his career by winning the Grey Cup with Ottawa in Ottawa in 2017. So there was always this idea that he would hang on until, because the consensus is that Ottawa will get the Grey Cup in 2017 to go with the 150th anniversary of Canada. Like, it makes sense. Like, it's a no-brainer that Ottawa gets the cup next year. But he's always kind of floated this idea out there, and I don't know if people really remember that. But the thing with this, and this is like typical Marcel Desjardins. I know that Burris took less money in this to extend the contract. He's not going to make the reported $500,000 or so that he makes now in that last year. But there's still, like, what's significant pay cut has been used. But what's significant? Like, is significant taking 50% less salary? So now he's going to make, like, $225,000, $250,000. Is significant, because Burris is not playing for league minimum. Burris is not going to play for, like, $110,000. Like, he's not going to accept that. The reason he's in Ottawa to begin with is they offered him a boatload of money after the Ticats let him go. That's why he signed there. Like, he got a ridiculous amount of money, like $500,000 a year for 3 years from that team. So he's not going, like, significant pay cut is all relative. So if you're going to pay Burris, let's go on the low side and say he's making 200, because it's a nice round number. They signed Trevor Harris. Trevor Harris isn't making a lot this year, but next year's pay jumps to like 425. So if you got $600,000 to $700,000 tied up in just two players in a league with a 5.5 million dollar salary cap, that is terrible cap management. Now, the option is always there to maybe rework Trevor Harris's deal, release Trevor Harris, trade Trevor. Like, there's a lot of things that can still happen because we haven't had the 2016 season yet, so we're getting a little ahead of ourselves talking about the 2017 season. However, like you said, there's going to be someone unhappy in Ottawa, and if Trevor Harris feels disrespected because he's like, look, I'm 30 years old. By the time Burris actually leaves, he's going to be 32. That's a little old to finally be getting the reins of a starting team. Like, maybe another opportunity presents itself somewhere else that's even better than Ottawa. Like, it just seems so curious as to why you would do this, because Burris is not the guy that people, like, I've heard, oh, he'll take on a mentor role and all that sorts of stuff in his last year. That has not really been Henry Burris's makeup. And this is not a knock on Burris. A lot of great players do not accept being anything but the number one guy. Joe Montana, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning. These guys don't accept being the number two. That's the reason these guys asked for to be out of where they were or retired after their body. Like, you're not going to see these guys. You never saw Joe Montana sit on the bench and be happy about it. Brett Favre did not want to groom Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. So these guys they want to be starting quarterbacks. You know what? BC is a good situation. Dave Dickinson did not want to sit behind Casey Printers. He didn't make noise about it, but there's a reason he started in the Grey Cup and then Printers was out and Dickinson was in. He didn't want to be the number two guy. They didn't bring Dickinson in to be a number two guy. You don't have Henry Burris be a number two guy. This is not in his makeup. We saw it in Hamilton firsthand in 2013, Ken Austin's first year here. Burris wasn't playing that great and he was okay, and the team did get to the Grey Cup, a lot to do with Burris, but they brought in Dan Lefevre and Jeremiah Mazzoli in certain situations to run these different packages. It was Dan Lefevre who scored the winning points in the East semifinal against Montreal and Guelph to get the Ticats to the East final against Toronto, which got them to the Grey Cup. Burris did not take that too well. He likes to be, he had made noise in the press about, I don't feel like I can get into a rhythm when I, you know, work a couple of series and then come out. We saw it in Calgary with Drew Tate in 2011 when Huffnagel made the decision, Burris is done, I'm bringing in Drew Tate, he's going to be the quarterback. Burris did not want to be a backup in Calgary. He could have happily stayed in Calgary, been the number two quarterback, made a decent amount of money probably, and enjoyed the end of his career. Now, he had some great years since then, so he was partially right in not wanting to be a backup. But this idea that now he'll be able to do it, history doesn't suggest that Henry Burris is a guy who's going to be able to sit on the bench, clap hands, pat backs, pat butts, and be happy about it. He wants to be the guy, and he kind of gets a little temperamental when he's not. So this idea that he's going to go into next season and they're going to have this open competition and Burris is going to be okay with it, I think Red Blacks fans are going to be in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, this guy is a big ego, just like any other starting quarterback in any of their leagues. So if they're going to, it's just a complete waste of money and complete waste of time if they sign Trevor Harris and then he doesn't start a game ever and he just gets released. Because, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that they would extend Burris for the length of Trevor Harris's contract. It just blows my mind. And I just don't see this ending well. I don't see it going well in Ottawa, because if he's the backup, I mean, Burris never gets hurt. I mean, yeah, they have a dependable backup that could be a starter behind Burris, but this guy, I mean, Burris just doesn't get hurt, so Trevor Harris is never going to play while Burris is there. You know, I know it could happen, but in the past, it just hasn't happened, so I don't see how this makes sense at all, and that's just how I feel about it. If they trade Trevor Harris or get rid, you know, cut Trevor Harris because of the Burris extension, I just, that's a big hit scratcher, because Burris is 41, Trevor Harris is 30. You know, he could be the future quarterback, so to waste him and just to trade him or get rid of him would be a huge mistake for the future of the Red Blacks, in my opinion. So this whole thing has kind of been bungled by Desjardins, so you know, it could work out, but as of right now, I'm just questioning these decisions.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Marcel Desjardins fan. I remember he was general manager here, he made a lot of big mistakes, and this to me this is one of those things where if it works out, then he looks like a genius.
Mm-hmm.
History shows this is probably not going to work out, and this is going to blow up in their face at some point this season. Just wait until Henry Burris has one of those three interception halves that he got away with it last year, mostly because he played so great for the majority of the season. But I'm pretty certain, if I recall correctly, that first game against Montreal, it was in Montreal, not Ottawa, but didn't he throw like three first half interceptions against the Owls last year to open the season? They still won the game, but I think he was putrid to start the game.
Yeah, I think so. I think that happened, yeah.
Now, if that happens in a game in Ottawa, and they know Trevor Harris is on the bench, you're going to hear the calls for Trevor Harris. I don't care what anyone says. The backup quarterback is always the most popular guy in town. I sat in the stands for Ticats games when Danny McManus was not playing great. It was near the end of his career. And fans were calling for Marcus Brady. And fans were calling for, I think it was Timmy Chang was there at the time too. Like, they were calling for the backup. And this was, we're talking about a guy who was going to the Hall of Fame. Burris is the same. He's going to the Hall of Fame. But if he starts playing poorly, the calls to put Harris in are going to be there. That's going to rattle Burris. He does not like not being kind of insulated. And I'm not saying this is an insult to him, but this is just what I've seen over his near 20-year career in the CFL. If he's not kind of coddled, then he kind of goes into a funk, and that could spell doom for Ottawa. With when the fans know they have a reliable, good quarterback sitting in the wings, they're not going to be able to put up with kind of the same stuff they put up with Burris in year one of the Ottawa experiment. And I've said for a very long time, I see them taking a slight dip this year, just because it's inevitable that he's not going to do what he did last year. It's if that happens, then he has somehow found the elixir of life and has turned back the clock. I don't see it happening. I think that was less together, and he made this great season. He's going to take a dip. There's going to be some games where he's going to be two interceptions, three interceptions, and it's. I just don't see this going well. I just don't.
Yeah, he's a guy that's, you know, some quarterbacks will get motivated by a strong backup, a guy that's, you know, nipping at his heels, but he's not one of those guys. He's gonna have a rough time, I think, this year. Well, maybe, you know, who knows? But yeah, he doesn't like that pressure when there's a guy behind him that could take over his spot.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch that play out. Just another storyline to follow in this season of football. So it wouldn't be a week in the CFL without someone feeling disrespected by something someone said. I believe last time we were talking about Dean Blundell and his stupid tweet. And now we have Jennifer Hedger's comments on SportsCenter in the moments after the Toronto Raptors lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. She made a comment about how the city of Toronto has not had a professional sports championship since the Blue Jays won in 1993. That prompted Toronto Argonauts defensive back Matt Black to say, pretty sure the CFL is a professional league. Because he's right. The interesting thing is we have the Toronto Argonauts, who have won, I believe it's 4 Grey Cups since 1993. And even so, we have the NLL, or is it the NLL, I think?
Toronto Rock.
Toronto Rock won like a boatload of championships. Mm-hmm. But we'll focus on the CFL here because that's what we talk about. So you saw Hedger's comments, I'm assuming. What are your thoughts?
I think it was a slip up by her. I don't know if she, you know, is a not a big CFL fan, or I think, you know, she explained it as the Big Four, you know, but that's not what she said. She said professional sports. So it's kind of a slap in the face. And you would expect that thing from, you know, on Sportsnet Connected or whatever. But for the on SportsCenter, on TSN, the network that owns the rights to the CFL, you think there'd be a little bit more respect. And is she, the comment was just blatantly wrong. It was just incorrect. Professional, CFL is a professional sport. Like you said, the National Lacrosse League is a professional sport. I think it was an honest mistake, and I think you know you can't attack her too much, but it was just a little bit of a kick in the face to the CFL and to the Toronto Argonauts. So it just you know, you expect that from based in Toronto, the lack of respect for the league. So it sucks, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's not all on her. There's scripts that are written. There's producers and guys like that oversee what goes on the air. Maybe this was an off-the-cuff remark, but it seemed a little too planned for that to be it. Another part of this that kind of bothered me, and I the more I've thought about it, the more I've come down on it, but Derek Taylor, who, if you follow him on Twitter, tweeting out CFL stats like there's no one's business. This guy is clearly a massive fan of the Canadian Football League. He was her co-host that day, and he didn't correct her. Now, I thought about that. He's not going to correct her on air because that's going to look...
Yeah, it would seem a little bit argumentative and it would just make her look bad. So I understand why he didn't say anything, but I bet he was thinking in the back of his head, like, oh, Argos. Well,
yeah, and I'm thinking maybe, what if, did the script go through his hands and did he not think about it? And this idea of the Big Four, the CFL, as much as people might not want to admit it, is part of the Big Four in Canada. We don't have an NFL franchise up here. The NFL is not one of the Big Four. North American sports, absolutely. It's the Big One and then it's everybody else. But I don't know. I'm not going to kill her too much. It just seemed like it was a slip. I understand what she meant, because when you think about the general sports fan, they think about Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, National Football League, National Basketball Association.
Yeah.
They don't put the CFL in the category with those four. Mm-hmm. We disagree because we're CFL fans. We're CFL podcasters. But I understand where it came from. I don't think it was the worst thing she ever could have done. I'm glad that members of the CFL community, though, did kind of call her out on it. Like, hey, what about us? You said professional sports league. That we're professional. We get paid. We're professionals. And then she did come out and kind of apologize, sort of. And I think it's water under the bridge. It happened. There's nothing else. You can't do anything about it. Hopefully we don't see something like this happen in the future. It is a little disconcerting. It did happen on TSN, though. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean, she's covered numerous Grey Cups over the years. She's been at Grey Cups. I remember seeing her with Dutchie and, you know, over the years. So it's just... I think it was just a brain fart, and I don't think it's a huge deal. I don't think it was meant to be, you know, disrespectful towards the league like a guy like Dean Blundell was. You know, he's trying to rile up controversy and trying to be disrespectful. I think that she just slipped up, and, you know, it sucks that it happened, but I will move on from it, and I guess I'll forgive her. But like you said, Derek Taylor, like, he pretty much all he tweets out is CFL stuff. So you know that guy's a huge CFL fan, and probably in the back of his mind he was thinking, ugh, that's gonna cause a little bit of a stir. But I can understand why he didn't say anything, you know, live on air
too. Oh, no. Like, I thought, like, why didn't he correct her? But then it's like, you don't do that on a live broadcast. That would look, like you said, argumentative. That it could cause her to, like, that would have been a horrible thing. I'm just surprised that maybe he didn't try to fix that in the pre-show. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes on these shows like this, but I think that's one of those things. It was a slip up. I think we just got to let it die.
Yeah, and you know, she's been on SportsCenter for, you know, 10 years or something, and he's a new guy, so he's not gonna, you know, step on her toes. So you don't really have to talk about it anymore, so I'm over it pretty much.
Yeah, so let's move on to this Josiah St. John thing in Saskatchewan, because this is just taken on a life of its own. This is kind of crazy. The number one overall pick has not reported to camp because he hasn't got a contract to his liking. The rumors are that he wants basically what the top picks got last year, which I think is fair. Saskatchewan apparently thought they sent him a fair offer. He rejected it. They then decided that they were going to pull that offer and offer him a 2-year contract at league minimum. He says that's disrespectful. I agree with him on that as well. This is crazy. We don't usually see these type of contract holdouts at all from CFL draft picks. Like, this is kind of new territory, no?
Yeah, for sure. I don't remember a time when the first overall pick has been, you know, holding out. So I agree. You know, I think that the first overall pick should get a lot more than the CFL minimum. You know, not crazy money, but, you know, they should get something for being that number one draft pick. So I can see where he's coming from. I think his agent has a reputation for holding out and trying to get as much money as he can. So maybe that's part of the problem. I'd like to see the number one pick get paid a really good wage, because it should mean something to be the first overall pick. I know that CFL draft is kind of weird. Sometimes the best players aren't picked first overall. It's like the player that's most available at the time. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if he lands with the Riders, or if they, you know, trade his rights, or what happens. Because, as you know, he should be a pretty good talent, and you know, maybe another team picks up his rights and gives him what he thinks he deserves.
Yeah, he's apparently demanded a trade out of Saskatchewan, doesn't want to play there. This thing's devolving into a giant mess. And for a team like Saskatchewan that we've talked about that needs Canadian talent, you look at their first four picks in the draft. You have Josiah St. John going first overall. He's not in camp. Who knows if he ever shows up. They didn't pick again until the third round, and they took a kicker in Quinn Van Gilswick. Then they take, oh no, I'm sorry, they took Buka, Ellie Buka, before they took same round, third round. So they took Buka, who's with, I believe it's the Arizona Cardinals, so he's not showing up until at least Labor Day. Then you have the kicker, who's a kicker, no offense, but you're a kicker, so it's not like he doesn't even count towards the ratio. Like, the starting ratio makes no difference. It helps towards the overall team ratio, but they already have a young kicker who's a Canadian, and they have a punter who is an Australian but still counts as a Canadian. And then they took David Onyemata, who will probably never see the field here. For a team that needed Canadian talent, to have one pick out of their top four and that pick to be a kicker, to be the only one signed, that does not look good, and doesn't make the Riders that bet much better with their Canadian talent this year. That's kind of a mess.
Yeah, I'm starting to question if the Riders are going to be that much improved this year. I know, you know, they have to be improved. They had a brutal season last year, and Jones comes in, and everyone thinks he's the savior, but you got to wonder if this team is going to be pretty awful again this year. You know, it's going to be tough with, you know, all those draft picks don't usually start in the first year, but for their future, it might be a big hit. And for this year, they might be pretty bad again.
Well, start or not start, draft picks are quality depth players.
Yeah, they could be special teams guys.
They're your sixth lineman. Like, look at Brandon Revenberg in Hamilton. All the talk is that he has looked fantastic throughout the entirety of training camp, and that he's probably going to be the number one Canadian backup going into the season at both guard and center. He was working at center apparently at camp yesterday because Mike Filer is hurt. So the Ticats have that guy. So if Diakowski goes down or Bomba goes down, they have that top pick offensive lineman ready to get in there and play. The Riders don't have that. And I'm with you. I was pretty high on thinking that they would make a step forward this year to a playoff spot, maybe even a playoff win, maybe even a home playoff game. The more I think about it, though, the more I think that they should be better simply because Darian Durant will be healthy, and I think that would make them a better team. But they had a pretty good offense last year without Durant, and their defense still sucked. But it was Canadian talent that really hurt them, and they're hurting there again this year. I've heard a lot of people say first place or home playoff game for these guys, and I'm starting to come down off that. I'm not sure if these guys make the playoffs at all this year. Maybe fight for the fourth spot in the West or a crossover spot in the East. I don't see much happening with this team. I think they're still at least a year away because of their Canadian talent situation. They just don't have any. They have, like, what, Rob Bagg, Shamad Chambers, Nick Dembski. Like, they have some Canadian guys there, but they don't have depth. And that's what separates the good teams from the bad teams, is having quality Canadian depth. And if they can't get their draft picks in there because either they're trying out for the NFL or they just can't get them signed, that's not good. That's really not good. I'm really coming down off the high of Saskatchewan making a major step forward. Like you said, they're not going to be as bad, because I can't imagine they're going to go 3-15 again. Just having Chris Jones there means the defense will be better. But yeah, I'm starting to come off the idea that the Riders make the playoffs this year. I really am.
Yeah, I could see them, like you said, maybe fighting for a crossover or missing the playoffs entirely. So it's going to be an interesting year in Saskatchewan. And, you know, just going offhand here, it was interesting to see that the Rough Riders lost money last year. I mean, I didn't see that coming. That was, the Rough Riders are merchandising wise are number three in Canada behind the Habs and the Leafs, and they lost money. So that's kind of off topic, but it was kind of a surprise to see.
No, well, you know, 3-15 season. I think that had a lot to do with it. And the thing is, people were apparently buying less merchandise because, again, the team's not doing well. They're spending less on concessions. If they didn't have such a front-loaded, because they had, what, I think five of their first six or four of their first five were home games last year. If they had a more balanced schedule, they might have lost a lot more money, to be fair. Because you're in those summer months, people are still apt to go to the games. You still think, oh, they're 0-3. Well, they can come out of this. And everyone will say, oh, well, the BC Lions, 0-5. So even when they were 0-5, 0-6, oh, but the BC Lions. And we heard that last year. Oh, well, the BC Lions did this. So any team that starts off really poorly, you always hear someone bring up one of their fans or a group of their fans. Well, the BC Lions, that was an anomaly. That the reason we bring up the BC Lions is because it happened that one time. We can't name other times when a team started that poorly and went on to not only win like 10 of their last 12 or whatever it was and then win the Grey Cup, because that just doesn't happen. So everyone seems to think that their team that starts 0-whatever will, oh, the BC Lions. So maybe that's why they had all those early home games. So fans were still going, still packing the stadium. And this year, I think they'll be fine. It's the last year at Mosaic. I think they're going to sell a ton of merch with like last year at Mosaic crap on it. People are going to want to go to these games. It's the last time Hamilton will play at Mosaic. It's the last time Winnipeg. Like, I don't think that they'll be financially hurt this year because of what's to come. But this, if they're a poor team again this year, that sets up pretty poorly to head into that new barn.
Yeah, you don't want to be a losing team going into the new stadium, because I'm sure they'll sell tons of tickets no matter what. But just for the optics of the whole thing, it's gonna be an interesting couple years in Saskatchewan. See if Jones can really do his thing and turn it around, because yes, he did it once at Edmonton, but can he do it again? Is this guy, like, I'm not saying he's a bad coach, he's a great coach, obviously, but can he turn another bad team around and turn them into a championship team? I'm not sure if he can.
Well, we are going to find out sooner rather than later. So this to me is exciting because we get to sit down now and we're doing a game preview, Michael. There's a game this week, Saturday at BMO. It's a preseason game only. I don't care. I'm stoked. We're going to get to watch live football. Well, I'm going to get to watch live football because I'm going to be there. I'm going to get, I decided, you know what? I can't just listen to this on the radio. I got to go to the game. So I bought tickets. I'm heading to BMO on Saturday. I'm taking in the BMO experience for the first time ever. I'm watching some live football. I got some things I want to see out of this game. Is there anything you're looking at? Let's start with the offense, because it's been a while. We're a little bit rusty. It's been a while since it's been a game preview. Been since November. Mm-hmm. Is there anything on the offense that you're looking at or hoping to hear slash see that you're kind of looking forward to out of this first preseason game in Toronto?
Well, I'm looking to see how Matthews plays, Jeff Matthews. I think that there's a lot of potential there. We saw him play last year in the preseason. I was like, whoa, this guy could be really good. And then he played in the regular season, had some ups, had some downs. So I'm seeing how he plays. I'm looking forward to, well, I guess I won't be really seeing anything if, yeah. But anyways, I'm looking to see how Jeremiah Mazzoli performs, because you know how he played in the playoffs. It was a great thing, especially that Ottawa game. I'm looking to see if he can really have some consistency in his game and really be a good quarterback from here on in. You know,
yeah, I agree. The two quarterback battles to me is what I'm looking at.
One game, you know, even in, it was a high stakes game and he played great, but I want to see that to keep going forward. I want to see him play good game after good game after good game. So, you know, the quarterback position, you know, Ja'Cory Harris, see how he plays. There's that new guy in there. So, yeah, quarterback position is a big thing. I want to see how the running backs do. You know, we're not going to see Gable that much or at all, but I want to see how the backups play. Everything pretty much. I want to see the new receivers. I want to see, you know, if Mike Jones gets in there.
Who?
Go ahead. Yeah, there you go.
Mike Jones.
Yeah, see if he gets in there, see if he does any good things, you know, because there's a little bit of changeover in the receiving corps this year. So, yeah, I'm looking at the offensive line. You know, I want to see how they perform, see if they can protect the quarterback well. So, yeah, pretty much the whole offense.
So everything. What you're looking for is everything.
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
That's kind of the same. The things that I'm kind of pinpointing on is, and I don't know how many quarterbacks we're going to see in this game. This is a little bit different when it comes to quarterbacks. Usually in the first preseason game, we don't see a lot of the veteran players. I don't think Simone Lawrence is going to see the field. I don't think John Chick is going to be there. Andy Fantuz, Luke Tasker, Chad Owens, like the big name guys, I don't think we're going to see on the field at all. In this one, we'll see. I think we'll see them more in the game in Hamilton. But this one, I think, is more about, this is evaluating the newer guys, the younger guys. I still think we're going to see, though, with the quarterback position. Usually we're heading into these, if you think about all the times that the Ticats have gone into a preseason schedule with their quarterbacks, start like, and again, I always differentiate, there's the pre-Belfay Bay, and then the Belfay post era. And that's where we were focusing on now, because that's when the team started to become competitive. So I always like to mention that I'm talking about then. Since Belfay became the head coach, we went into one season, Quinton Porter was the presumed starter. So he didn't really, there was no quarterback battle. Even though Kevin Glenn was here, there was really no quarterback battle with there. Then the next year, it was Glenn, and there was no quarterback battle there. And then it was Glenn the year after that. And then we had Henry Burris, and there was no battle there. And then we had Zach Caleros, and there was no battle there. So this is really the first time the team does not have a guaranteed day one starter. There is still very much a competition between Masoli and Matthews to see who will take that step. Now, I think Masoli probably has the leg up based on how he played in the last season, but hey, you never know. Matthews could, if you remember last year in the preseason, he looked great against Ottawa and won the backup job based on that performance. I'm interested to see how those two guys play. And if we see some of Jacory Harris, and if we see some of Jake Waters, I'm interested to see how that kind of plays out, because those two guys are kind of battling for that third quarterbacking spot. So there's some interest there. And of course, I'm always looking at rookies. You mentioned Mike Jones. Who? Mike Jones. I'm also curious to see Mercer Timmis. I want to see what he can do with on the CFL field. Is he going to play some slot back? Is he going to play some running? I kind of want to see what him get the ball maybe a couple of times and see what he can do, because he's local kid. We're all happy that he's a Ticat, so I'm kind of curious what he's doing. But I'm with you. I'm going to be looking at everything. But these are the two areas I want to see rookies, because I like rookies, and I want to see this quarterback battle. Now, defensively, what are you kind of looking for defensively? Pinpoint some things. I know it's obviously everything, but what are some things specifically that you're looking
for? Well, I'm looking at see if the defensive ends. I know that John Schick's not going to play, and the starters probably won't play a lot, but I'm looking to see who stands out in those positions on each side, you know, because we're going to have some depth. There's going to be some rotation in there. I want to see if anyone stands out in the defensive ends, and I want to see who stands out in the secondary as well. So those are the guys that I'm looking for. I want to, you know, if Cordy Stevens plays, what positions he's going to play? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, is he a safety? Is he the wide side corner? Yeah, I'm with you there too.
I
don't think he's going to play though.
Oh yeah, he probably won't play, but yeah, I want to see who stands out in the secondary and on the, you know, on the defensive line on the ends.
Yeah, same here. I'm looking at the secondary because there's a lot of turnover there again. I'm curious just to see how that'll play out. Who's going to be we know we got Emmanuel Davis. We know we probably got Rico Murray. We got Courtney Steven in there somewhere, be it safety. But there's still some spots open. So I'm curious to see what newcomers, because there's always Delvin Bro was a guy we didn't know, came in, was great. Emmanuel Davis took a couple years, but he put it together. Rico Murray, there's guys that you don't know that will step up, and there's going to be guys that weren't on this team last year. They're going to start day one, week one in Toronto in a couple of weeks. And I'm with you on the defensive line. I think the linebackers, even if they're not set as to who's it's going to be, I still think that that's a unit that we know Simone's going to start. It's likely that Hoffman Ellis is going to get a start. And from the looks of it at camp, it's Johnny Sears filling in for Eric Harris, which I think makes a lot of sense. He's a bigger defensive back that moves down. I think we talked about who could fill Harris's role on the team. And I think Sears and Rico Murray were two of the guys we thought could do it. And they've obviously gone with Sears. So I think the linebackers, I think that's really, we're going to see some guy like Simone's not going to play. Maybe Hoffman Ellis plays a little bit. Maybe Sears does, but who knows what we're going to see there. I'm thinking that the linebackers are kind of set. I don't think we have much to really worry about there. And I'm with you on the defensive line. I'm kind of curious, like Ted Laurent is hurt right now. So is Lyndon Gaydosh. There's still some young Canadian guys who's going to step up and try to be that other guy in the rotation. What about Drake Nevis? He's the new guy that everyone's going crazy over. That could be the next Brian Hall. Let's see how he plays. We got, is Adrian Tracy going to play? He's been talked about a lot for a guy who hasn't really done a whole heck of a lot in the CFL, but he's been used for promotional material. He's been all around Hamilton. They must have big plans for him. And so yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I want to see some of these younger guys especially, but I also want to see kind of who can step up and maybe replace some of these defensive linemen that we lost.
Yep, and then you got to mention the kickers too, because that's going to be a big storyline in the preseason and leading into the season. So I want to see how those guys perform, you know? Who takes the reins at kicker? Who makes the big field goals? Who makes the long field goals? Who's going to step up and be the field goal kicker this year?
Absolutely. That's a big thing too. There's so much that there's going to be a lot to watch that I'll be doing. Maybe you'll be listening to the game. I'm hoping you get a chance to.
Yeah, I hope if I'm off, I'll be listening.
I hope so. TSN 1150, I believe, will have the call. Yep. I'm going to be there watching in person, so I'm going to get to report back with actual eyeballs on players, what we're going to do. I'm with you on the punting thing. I'm kind of excited to feel like what it's going to be like at BMO to take in a game. Yep. I don't think I ever went to Exhibition Stadium when the Argos played there. I don't think I got into football until they'd kind of moved into the Sky Dome. So I've never really been like, that's close to the lake. Is that going to play an effect on, you know, the kicking game or even the passing game? I've never seen this before. So it's going to be kind of neat to take in this new atmosphere and these new conditions of Toronto football that haven't been around for close to 30 years. I'm excited. I said this before. I know it's preseason and it's not a huge thing to get excited about, but it's live football. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just the best.
Yeah. And you know, tomorrow night there'll be a game on TSN. So that's exciting too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So no questions this week, but we do have an interview. Unfortunately, Mike could not make it to this. So I sat down with Drew Edwards of the Hamilton Spectator and Three Down Nation. And we had a nice little chat about Ticats training camp and some other general CFL stuff. So let's go to that interview right now. All right. So I am going solo on this one. Mike is not here right now. So hopefully we'll get some thoughts from Mike later. But I get to sit here and have a conversation with someone that I've admired for a long time, has covered the Ticats for years, founder of Three Down Nation, Scratching Post blog. Everyone knows who he is. Drew Edwards, welcome to the show.
Josh, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. How are you today?
Well, you know, it's training camp, which is one of those double-edged swords, right? Because training camp is the beginning of the season, which is always good, but it's also the beginning of the grind, right? Like, the first couple of days of training camp are always like, yay, it's football! And then, like, after day eight, you're like, it's a bit like Groundhog Day. But, yeah, it's good, man. I mean, I think the off-season stuff is always interesting, but the football is the most interesting stuff to cover.
For sure, for sure. So that's great. I want to talk a bit about camp. I have not had a chance to get there. You know, life gets in the way. Can't always get where you want to be. But you've been there for most of it, correct?
Yeah, I've been there for most of it. That's fair. Steve has been there for a couple of days. Yeah, I've been there for the vast majority of camp in question.
Okay, so what are your kind of your general thoughts on this particular training camp so far? Has this one felt any different than the others that you've covered over the years?
Well, it's funny. Each coach has been different, right? So this is year eight for me covering the Ticats. And I covered Marcel Belfay for 3 years. And then I covered George Cortez for a year. And now this is year four with Kent. And so each training camp is very much a reflection of the guy running it in some respects, right? So the big outlier was really Cortez's camp, to be honest with you, because he was a guy who was old school. He ran 2-day practices instead of, you know, the power practice that both Belfay and Austin favor. Cortez was old school, man. It was helmets and shoulder pads as often as he could get them in there. It was a lot of reps. The guys were complaining about the amount of work that they were being put through. So Cortez's camp was the only one that was really, really different. Austin has a tendency to run high-tempo camps. He mixes in competition where he can. So if they can run drills that where they keep score, you know, once or twice during the session, they'll do that. And that always affects the energy level in camp. As soon as you start keeping score in any way, they get more animated. There's more chirping. So whenever they can do that, they do it.
Yeah, that's not surprising when you get a bunch of highly competitive athletes together who always want to win, right?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, I think most of these guys, well, all of them, no question, starting with Austin, are hyper-competitive people, right? And that's part of what's made them into professional athletes in a lot of respects. I remember having a conversation with Bob Obilovich when he was general manager of the Ticats, and he told me that he would never even let his grandson, who was, I think, 2 or 3 at the time, win at any game at all. Tiddlywinks, ball hockey, football in the backyard. Obi would never let his grandson win, and the reason was, in order to win, you had to earn it. And it was pretty funny, right? Like, that's your grandkid, they're small, you know, you probably shouldn't, you know, letting the Wookiee win is part of raising kids, but not for people for whom competitiveness is a way of life.
Yeah, so speaking of, like, kind of individuals so far, I know everyone kind of looks good in practice. Most of the time people look great. They're not really playing against anyone. A lot of times they're going against air, or it's not as it's not as physical as a game situation. But are there any players so far in camp that have stood out to you as just being like above and beyond excellent so far?
Well, above and beyond excellence a bit much, right? I mean, I think, like you say, it's training camp, so people have good days and bad days. You look sort of for consistency of performance, the guy that brings it day in and day out. Everybody can have one good day. It's really about having good days every day, and that's more difficult. And honestly, that's what often separates the pros from guys who have natural talent and ability but can't sustain a pro career because they just can't bring it every day in practice. And training camp is it's the ultimate example of that because, you know, you're doing two-a-days. It's practice after practice after practice. There's no games in the early going. It's hard to maintain that performance level, that intensity, to keep that focus. And so the guys that can do that have a tendency to be more successful. So, for example, guys that I've noticed that I haven't been able to see before, guys like John Chick, he's that guy, right, who just brings it on every single rep of every single play. And Chad Owens is another one of those guys who practices really hard regardless of the situation. I've not seen those guys in the past, right? I know who the strong practice players are on the Ticats now, guys like Luke Tasker, who's you know a really phenomenally hardworking guy. Jeremiah Mazzoli is one of those guys that puts work in every single day. But to see new guys like John Chick, gentlemen, like I said, Mike Daly's had a good practice session or good training camp, sorry. And then there are guys that don't particularly look good in practice on a regular basis, but look much better in games. And there are a few of those too, right? Ryan Bauman's been that guy as far as I'm concerned. A guy that doesn't look spectacular in practice, but when you see him in a game can be dominant in certain situations. In terms of the newcomers, you know, I think Larry Dean's having a good camp, a guy with a bunch of NFL experience. He's looked quite strong. I'm trying to think. Drake Nevis, I think, has looked good. I've still got some questions about the secondary, but overall, I think there are some guys that are starting to emerge, but it's really going to be the preseason games are when guys who are trying to make this club can really make a statement, right? That's the moment where you really get your opportunity to cement, okay, yeah, this guy really has a chance to make this team. So we'll start to see that, you know, by Saturday.
I was going to ask specifically about both John Chick and Chad Owens because those were the two big offseason acquisitions. Obviously, you're well aware of how I felt about Owens signing when it happened, as is, I think, everybody else. But yeah, I was kind of curious just about those two, but you touched on that. So this QB battle that we have going, the fans are obviously interested in that. From the sounds of it, everything I'm reading, everything I'm seeing, everything I'm like just eating up with when it comes to camp news, it seems as if Jeremiah Masoli has kind of separated himself from the rest of the group, especially Jeff Matthews. Is that how you see it so far?
You know, look, I think Matthews is taking the first of the A reps, okay? So, you know, if there are eight reps with the A unit, then, you know, Mazzola will get the first four or five and then Matthews will get the next, you know, three or four, right? It's clear, I think, that Mazzola is at the top of the hierarchy, but I think it's more a 1A, 1 and 1A situation. I really don't think this has necessarily been decided quite yet. I think that the preseason games are going to play a large role in which one of these guys actually emerges as the starter. Mazzoli has looked good, and Matthews has looked good in their own way, right? Matthews, and he did this last training camp, he did this in the preseason too, right? He makes good decisions. He is very accurate with the football. Those are two things that Kent Austin really likes. And we saw that, like last year, right? In the preseason, he looked phenomenal against a vanilla defense, against guys that weren't necessarily trying to disguise their defensive formations or what blitzes they were bringing. Where he struggled was in situations where teams were trying to confuse him, right? And that's what we saw in the regular season. With Mazzoli, you know, he doesn't have the same kind of accuracy as Matthews does. But the thing about Mazzoli is that, you know, in game situations, he just finds a way to get it done, right? Guys like playing for him. And that's sort of the X factor of Mazzoli, right? He has more of a game presence than Matthews does at this stage. So, you know, we'll see. I really think that this starting job will be earned in the preseason, not so much at practice.
So do you think in the preseason games, because in years past, we've kind of seen the guy who, and maybe Hamilton's just been lucky that they've had a presumptive starter going into the seasons. Pretty much ever since you've covered the team, it was Quinton Porter for a while, then it was definitely Kevin Glenn, then we had Henry Burris, and then we had Zach Caleros. These guys were, going into the season, you knew that they were the starter. Now this year it's a bit different. We have this kind of camp battle going on. Do you expect that we'll see both Mazzoli and Matthews play in both preseason games?
It's really hard to say. I'm not quite sure how Austin's going to do it. He's done it in different ways in the past where he could give Harris and Waters a half in the first preseason game and then let Matthews and Mazzoli play in the second preseason game when you have a tendency to see more experienced guys in the second game than in the first, right? In the first game, it's really about evaluation. You'll see a lot of rookies, a lot of guys who are trying to make the team, whereas in the second game, you see more guys you would expect to start the season play. So do you want to see Matthews and Mazzoli play against those guys, or do you want to give them more time in both the preseason games? I don't know how Austin's going to play it this time around. Could we see them in both games? Yes. If he really needs to take a long look at both guys, he may do that. But he also got to measure that against injury, right? I mean, if you lose one or, God forbid, both of those guys, then you could be in a real difficult situation heading into the season. So you have to temper having a look at them with protecting them from injury, and that's always the balance you're trying to strike in the preseason games.
Yeah, we're talking preseason games, and that to me is exciting because we're talking actual game football. Is there anything else that you're expecting to see or that you're going to be looking for in the game this Saturday against the Argonauts?
Well, again, I think you want to see guys who have shown well in training camp. Can they apply that in regular season games? In the preseason games. I still think there is some uncertainty in that secondary. I think we're looking for a middle linebacker in some respects. The kicking game is going to be an issue in these preseason games. I mean, we could be looking at a situation where, Cody Mandel and Brett Maher may get two or three kicks in the preseason game, and those kicks may make the difference between whether they start week one or not. It could be that narrow. I mean, Jeff Reinbold told me that, that practice sort of makes a difference, but what happens when the lights are on is really the mitigating factor when you judge players of any kind, but kickers in particular. So how those two guys perform in the preseason will make a difference. And it won't just be field goals, Josh. It's going to be kickoffs. It's going to be punting. Those things are important too. It's one of the reasons why Justin Medlock isn't here anymore. Everybody knows about Justin Medlock's, field goal kicking ability. Where Medlock didn't perform as well as the team felt he should was in kickoffs, and particularly in punting and directional punting, which has become such a huge part of the game now. Those things will make a difference as well in terms of who makes it into week one as the kicker for the Ticats.
Are you excited to kind of see a football game at BMO?
I am. I mean, the preseason, maybe it's because I've been doing this 8 years. The preseason doesn't hold the same kind of – I don't get as excited about preseason games as I do for regular season games. I'd be curious to see how it's all set up and all the rest of it, but it's really the regular season that will tell you a lot about what that BMO experience is going to be like. Am I curious to see the preseason? Absolutely, but – The game I'm really looking forward to is week one, in part because of BMO, in part because of all the ex-Ticats now playing for the Argos, and in part because I think these early games, this game in particular, can make a difference in terms of how these teams finish at the end of the regular season. Home field advantage makes a difference, and they'll have two more games later in the season, but this game, week one, could make a difference as to who hosts a playoff game at the end of the season. So you don't want to sleep on, even though people say, oh, it's early in the season. When it comes to tiebreaker, this game is going to matter.
Yeah, I've taken some heat over the offseason for being really high on the Argos and looking at this game and thinking, Toronto could get out because of the injury to Zach Caleros. The Argos could get out to a bit of a lead on Hamilton in the standings. They could win this opening game and maybe, because they seem to be relatively healthy, like Ricky Ray seems to be as healthy as he's been pretty much since they won the Grey Cup. So I'm looking at that, and you know, Ticat fans, you're a Ticat fan. How can you think the Argos are going to be any good? And I don't know. And me and Mike every week seem to get into this where we just talk about how much we like what the Argos have done. Are you kind of on board with that? Like, do you look at Toronto and look at them as a potential Grey Cup contender?
I do. I think you're absolutely right, Josh. I look, their Canadian talent is strong. I like their pickups in the offseason. They have continuity in the front office with Jim Barker. They have continuity in the coaching staff with Scott Milanovic. Scott Milanovic is one of the best coaches in the CFL, particularly from an offensive point of view. I like Rich Stubler as a defensive coordinator. They'll be better on defense, right? I mean, you lived through a Casey Crehan season. You know what that is like, right?
Yep.
Stubler is an instant upgrade there. And they've got some pieces, right? We know about Brian Hall and Justin Hickman. We know about Brian Bulkey. Your friend Ricky Foley is still there. You know, they did lose some pieces along that defensive line, but they replaced them with quality, experienced CFL guys. I like their Canadian talent, particularly up front. I think they're very solid. It does, however, rest on Ricky Ray to a large extent. If he gets hurt again or can't play to the level that people expect him to play at, you know, they're going to be in trouble quickly. There is no Trevor Harris is not walking through that door to bail them out. They'll have some young guy bumps and bruises, much like the Ticats did last year, if Ricky Ray goes down. So if Ricky stays healthy, they are a serious contender. If he gets hurt, they could scuffle. I won't say struggle. I would say scuffle.
Okay, fair enough. Do you look at this season, like going into it, and look at all nine teams across the board and kind of can't really figure out where everyone sort of slots in, either due to injuries or player movements or coaching movements? For me, this seems like maybe the most difficult season to kind of handicap going in, because of just you look at a team like Calgary and you think, well, they're Calgary, they're always there, but then the new head coach and
exactly
lost some veteran players, and then you look yep. at And do you feel the same way?
Not a single team in this league right now without a question mark. Not one. And Calgary, look, again, great Canadian talent, lots of veteran guys, proven quarterback, but you're right. I mean, Dave Dickens has never been a head coach in this league. And I'm sorry, being a head coach is different than being a coordinator. And nobody knows for sure what kind of head coach Dave Dickinson is going to be. There are questions in Edmonton. You know, Jason Moss has never been a head coach, right? They lost some talent off that roster, right? In Saskatchewan, obviously, 3-15 season, they've made a lot of changes, no question. But, you know, how much can Chris Jones and John Murphy accomplish in one off season? You know, in BC, is Wally Buono still an elite-level coach? Is Jonathan Jennings the real deal? Can they replace Andrew Harris? They've got some questions among their Canadians, which is always a red flag for me. If you look at Ottawa, they lost some talent. I think there could be some friction at quarterback with Henry redoing his deal, saying he's going to be here next year, but Trevor Harris sort of clearly going there hoping for a starter job. Henry doesn't handle those situations particularly well, as we've seen in other places. They lost some Canadian talent. That's always, you know, a problem for any team. In Montreal, Jim Popp is a head coach. They've been through that. Who's their starting quarterback? You know, can Kevin Glenn still get it done at the age that he's at, right? Question marks there as well. So, and in Hamilton, you look, can Jeremiah Mazzoli get it done in the absence of Zach Caleros? How big is the departure of Tommy Kendall? How do they replace guys like Taylor Reed and Eric Harris? How do they replace Brian Hall? Can they go with Duquesne? Like, there are, who's going to kick for them? There are question marks all across the league, and I agree with you. That's unusual. Usually you can point to one or two teams and say, okay, well, we know what they're about. We know they're going to be good. Every team's got question marks this year.
Okay, so when we had Justin on, Justin Dunk, your fellow podcast partner, we had him on a couple weeks ago to talk about the draft. And mm-hmm. we ended up getting into this conversation about your glorious, glorious beard. And I kind of wondered aloud amongst the three of us as we were talking, if what the players that have seen you day in, day out all these years, how they would kind of react the first time they saw it. So what has been some of the reactions from the guys? Have you taken any ribbing, or have people just been like, oh, it's just, that's just all there is to it? Like, has it just been ho-hum, or have you taken, have you heard some chirps and stuff?
Yeah, no, no question. So the beard, the last time I shaved was the day of the Grey Cup. So I shaved the Grey Cup Sunday, and then caught a flight the next morning, early in the morning, and was basically on holiday for the better part of December, and didn't have a reason to shave, and so didn't. And then got to sort of went back to work in January and was like, well, I still don't have a reason to shave, really. And I've now got this month of growth, and, you know, let's sort of see what happens. And now, 6 months later, I still haven't shaved. There's been some trimming involved, but that's how sort of the beard came to be. Have I taken some ribbing? Yes. Simone Lawrence,
Perfect. He was the guy I wanted to know what he thought of it.
He was like, I can't remember what his line was. It was something on the lines of, how does your wife let you walk around in public with that? And that's what he said as I was walking into the stands. He's on the field and I'm walking up, you know, towards the press box, and he sort of yells this out as I'm sort of walking up the stairs. Yes, pretty much everybody that's known me for, has been with the team for any period of time and has got to know me in any way has had something to say about the beard. When they introduced Stefan Potasik as the offensive coordinator, there was a photo op, and so there's all these people, there's like a line of like whatever, six or seven people, and they're all taking photos, and Potasik's like, I don't even know where to look right now. And Austin says to him, just look at Drew's beard, that's the best place to look. There's been some chirping, but listen, if I'm going to shave it off, and I haven't made a final decision, but it makes sense to shave it off week one, right? If it's going, it's probably going in time for week one, so that I can sort of complete the circle of, you know, off-season beard, during the season, no beard. So that would be the sensible time to shave it off. That said, it is an affectation and not a sort of, you know, not a lifestyle choice the way yours is, I think. But I have become quite fond of it. And so I am sort of still considering perhaps keeping it for the season. But more than likely, I think it comes off week one.
See, mine oddly started as I just didn't want to shave anymore. So I woke up.
I hate shaving, Josh. I hate it. I hate shaving a lot, actually.
I'm 100% with you. And, like, so the story of mine, if anyone really cares, is I did Movember in 2010. And me and the group of people that I go to the games with, as well as my cousin, her boyfriend, my brother, we all were at the Ticats-sponsored tailgate. And we got a picture taken with Bob Young. And my friend got it put on a mug for my cousin, because my cousin's like, this is one of the best pictures. Like, she's a really big Ticats fan, and it's just like, oh my God, we got a picture. Like, Bob, holy crap. So he got this picture taken, put it on a mug, and I'm looking at myself going, I look like a complete idiot with like just a mustache and nothing else on there. And ever since I was a little kid, I always was like, my dad had a beard when I was growing up, and I was like, oh man, if you have a beard, you're like a grown man. So then I just said, you know what, screw it. And I decided not to shave. And that was – so the last day I ever shaved was December 1st, 2010. Now,
okay.
Like yourself, I've done some trimming, and usually I'll go the entire winter without trimming because I basically use it as a scarf of sorts.
It does make a difference. It does make a difference in terms of warmth during the winter. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Like I'm standing outside, you know, shoveling snow, doing whatever it is that I have to do out there, and it's – my neck doesn't get cold. I feel warmer. Maybe it's all in my mind, but it works. I feel like it works. Now, I have not – I usually trim sometime – like once – I'm also a guy who once the shorts go on for the summer, I don't wear pants again until it's cold out. Usually when the shorts come on, the beard
But you do
off.
Wear pants, right?
Let's I just, do wear pants, okay. Yes. I just want to make sure. I definitely wear pants.
Cool.
So usually the pants come off, the shorts go on, and the beard gets trimmed. But then I was like, it's not bugging me. I'm going to keep it. So I can't decide when I'm going to trim mine, because it's got to the point now where – it's basically, you can't see my neck. Like, it's not there. Like, if you looked at me, I'd be head, like face, beard, and then chest. So people kind of look at me kind of funny But I'm kind of with you. I don't know when I kind of want to get rid of it, because I remember when you were doing the scratching post streak and you were like, I'm going to just blog every day for a season. And then it turned into what, like almost 5 years?
5 years, yeah.
So I know you're a big streak guy. I'm kind of the same way, where it's like, well, you know, if no reason to do it, why would I do it? So
yep.
I don't know. Maybe I'll be with you in week one of the season. I'll trim the thing down. Are you going to get rid of it completely?
Yes. If I get rid of it, well, I'd probably... What I would do is I would have some fun with it, right? I'd shave the sides down a little bit. I'd probably keep a giant goatee for, you know, maybe a day or two or something like that, or amuse myself with it. But, yeah, if I'm going, if it's going, it's going. Yeah, I'll shave the whole thing right off. Yep, no question.
Yeah, see, I would just trim mine because I usually use it just – I'm a bigger dude. Well, we've met each other. You've seen me. I'm not exactly small. So – I kind of use it to hide like the 9 chins that I'm sporting underneath here. So if I just keep something there, I feel a little less self-conscious about the fact that I have this giant baby face. And when I shave, like I look like I'm 34. And when I don't have a beard, I look like I'm 19. And people are like, how, like it's kind of ridiculous. I guess you with the,
in my case, yeah, it's different, right? Like basically I get a lot of Santa jokes, right? Like mm-hmm. this beard makes me look about 10 years older, I think, because it's so gray. Right. So, it doesn't make me, I look younger too, without my beard, but I probably look the appropriate age as opposed to like 10 years older, which is what I look like with this giant gray beard.
It's actually funny. Years ago, I took my nephew to a mall. We were like, I was babysitting him during the day, and we're just like, let's go walk around the mall. And I actually got stopped by a mall Santa who gave me his card and was like, you know, if you ever want to be a Santa Claus at a mall, like we're always looking for younger guys. Like, here's my card. And I was like, is this the path I'm going to take? Like, if I go down this road, like I'm a mall Santa, like that's my life.
You know,
and
what?
I wasn't quite ready to do it at the time, but now looking back, it's like, I should have done it.
One of my favorite books is Grumpy Santa Claus. It's one of the books I read to my kids. So, and I do have a tendency to be a bit stern from time to time. So the Grumpy Santa look, I could live with that, man. But I wouldn't want to scare children. That's the only – well, I wouldn't want to scare children more than I do already. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so I got one more question for you before I let you go. And there has been this long rumor of a story that involves you, my illustrious co-host, a pair of shoes, and some vomit. Do you care to share your side of the story?
Yes. So, Moncton. We're in Moncton. I think it's the second trip to Moncton. So I'd have to look up the year.
The one where they played Montreal?
Yes.
I guess I'm going to guess 2013, just because that was the year they were in Guelph. Because I went in 2011 when they played Calgary.
Yeah, right. So
I'm guessing it's 2013.
2013. And I'm walking from the hotel to the bar where the Ticat fans have gathered, and out walks Mike, who I sort of know in passing from Twitter, but not really know too well. And he's still a ways down the road, but he sort of walks down to the edge of the bar, sort of leans against the building, and I'm like, hey, man, are you all right? And just as I sort of say that, he just pukes his guts out into the street. And I'm like, you know, he insists or felt that he puked all over my shoes, and he actually did not. Like, you know, you could sort of see it coming a little bit, and so I sort of stepped back, and he... You know, he was even as he was doing it, he was mortified that it was happening. But I was like, hey, man, you know, it happens to the best of us and yada, yada, yada. And the thing about Mike was he just like basically wiped his mouth, turned around and walked with me into the bar and like was there the rest of the night. As far as I could tell, there were other Herb Zerkowski was there that night, and Jeff Majorly was there, another longtime Ticat fan. And it was there were some pretty funny photos from that night. It was really, there was a bunch of, Alouettes assistant coaches there. It was one of those nights. And I've had a number of these over the years, man, but you know, this league has a tendency to bring everyone closer together. It's players and coaches and beat writers and fans and, you know, dogs and cats drinking together kind of thing. And I've had, had a number of nights like that over the years. That was a particularly epic one, as the Moncton trips have a tendency to be, but really fun night. And yeah, Mike was still continuously, I think, mortified by that particular incident. I simply find it pretty funny.
I know every once in a while the pictures get put up online, and it's like kind of like a never forget type thing. So
Jeff Majorly's got some photo evidence of that whole night that he likes to bring up from time to time, particularly since Herb Drakowski was involved as well. But yeah, it is one of those nights, I think, that that lives on in infamy.
That's a great way to put it. I'm going to talk to Mike, and we're going to get his side of things, because I'm really curious what he can remember, because from the sounds of it, he was not exactly entirely in his own head at the time.
Well, that's Mike. Yeah, I mean, I think he has, you know, when Mike goes hard, he goes hard, right? And he was in fine form that evening. Not in a, it's funny that, you know, not in a terrible way, just in a vomit and keep going way. But, you know.
In a very Mike way.
That's a good way to put it. That's a very good way to put it.
Okay, so Drew, thank you so much for coming on, giving us some information on training camp. I doubt anyone who listens to this is not going to know where to find you, but just in case there's someone out there who doesn't know who you are, give them some plugs where they can find your stuff, where they can find you online.
Well, you know, 3outnation.com is really where they can find you and me and Justin Dunk and all our other cohorts from around the league. The site's doing really well. And, you know, I think it's gaining momentum as a place to go for interesting and analytical, CFL content. You know, I've been really happy with, where the site's at now, and, traffic numbers are, I'll just put you this way. We had our best month ever in May of this year. And I just, you know, I think I'm really proud of it. What can I tell you? It's been a work in progress, but where we are now, I think, it's great stuff. And your stuff and John Hodge, Santino, like it's a cool combination of news and some guys who are longtime bloggers, but think and write in an analytical way and with unique perspective. And we got some old grizzled veterans there, and we got one of the best newsbreakers in the CFL in Justin Dunk. It's quite the mishmash of characters, but it seems to be working just fine. And it's where you can find me, and it's where you can find a bunch of other good stuff too.
Man, I'm not used to the guest complimenting me like that. I don't know what to say.
Good stuff, Josh. I love your stuff. You know that. And, you know, you've done some great work for us, and I'm hoping you'll continue to do it in the future. I hope you enjoy doing it as much as I do, man. It's fun times.
I will be there as long as you will have me.
Sounds good, brother.
All right. Thank you so much for doing this, and we'll have to talk again sometime. Maybe get Mike on the horn here, and maybe that's when we'll get his side of the story.
Sounds good. Take care, Josh.
Take care, Drew. All right. And that was that. So I want to thank Drew again for coming on the show. Great to have him on. I hope to have him on in the future. Obviously, you heard the tail end there, the viewers did, about the story of when Drew and Mike met. So Drew gave his side of the story. Mike, what is your side? Did yours coalesce with his, that it was basically, because the long rumor, the mythical rumor, is that you kind of threw up on him. He kind of debunks that and says, you could kind of tell that he was going to throw up, so I'm not, he didn't really throw up on me. What's your recollection of that evening? Because from the sounds of it, you don't recollect much.
Well, it was about a 10-yard penalty away from me when it happened, but I had a few wobbly pops, I guess you could say. And I remember I had to leave the bar, and I came outside. It was a CFL gathering. It was after the game, the Moncton game, the second one, Hamilton versus Calgary. I went outside, and I was
It was the Hamilton-Calgary one? Because yep. Drew said it was the Hamilton-Montreal one.
Oh.
It was the 2013.
Yeah, because there was back-to-back Hamilton games, wasn't there?
Yeah, because the first one.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
it was 2000. Okay, because we were kind of, okay. So it was 2013.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, I had to vomit, and I went outside, and I was by the side of the building, and, you know, I was doing my thing, and I looked up, and I saw Drew coming, and, you know, I'm sure in his head he was like, oh, because I had a Ticats jersey on, Ticats, you know, all Ticats, and he was probably like, oh, God, please don't recognize you. Because I was, you know, puking. And then I, looked up and I was like, oh, hey, Drew. And walked up towards him, started talking to him for a bit. And then, you know, I said, how you doing? And he said, well, better than you. we talked for a little bit there. And I said, you know, it was nice to meet you because I met him the year before in Calgary briefly. But I talked to him the night before and got pictures with him and all that stuff. And, you know, we talked for, you know, a minute maybe. And then I said, well, I better go home. And that was about it. So that's my recollection of it. I'm not sure what he said because I didn't hear the interview yet. But yeah, that's what I remember.
Your stories kind of jive with one another. So I just always remember that the story was from other sources that you threw up on him. And that's kind of what I wanted to get out of it. And apparently that's not the case. So no. We can put that rumor to bed. Mike did not throw up on Drew's shoes.
Yeah, that would have been, you know, it makes for a better story. But no, I did not throw up on the beat writer for the Ticats.
So. Oh, well, you know what? It's still an all-time classic story, one that even though I wasn't there for, I will probably never, ever forget. So you can at least you can say you made a memory. That's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, So I remember it, and I'm sure Drew will remember it for a long time, too.
So that's it for this.
And the funny thing was, actually.
Oh, you got some more. Oh, sorry, yeah. Sorry. Don't mean to cut you off.
I went back to the hotel room, and I sent him a tweet on Twitter apologizing for the whole thing. And then, you know, some other people got involved, saw the tweet, and I think it was another reporter. I forget who it was. It might have been Fitzgerald or something. He said, oh, CFL, great fans or whatever. So it was kind of funny.
I can only imagine what a drunk Mike apologetic tweet would look like. It's I'm sure there were a lot of misspellings.
Yes, probably.
Oh, still great, buddy. Still great. So that's it. We are done. Again, subscribe to the show on iTunes, or you can listen to it at 3 Down Nation. We didn't do questions this week, but we will get back to that. When we do interviews, we don't like to do questions because we don't want the show to go like 9 hours. We're already going pretty long on this one, and there wasn't supposed to be that much to talk about. But anyway, if you want questions answered, hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle?
Mike_Ticats.
And I'm Josh Smith_82. And again, always post those questions and comments in the 3 Down Nation comment section. So that is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.